NASA releases a New Year's Eve surprise for the second year in a row. The Eclipse Auction is set for January 14th. And Ed Bolin responds to a BizJet critic. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. We've made it through another year. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, December 31st, 2008. Keeping its tradition of releasing controversial reports in the waning hours of the year, when it knows the news media will be short-staffed, NASA yesterday quietly released a 400-page report detailing the circumstances that led to the February 2003 loss of the Space Shuttle Columbia and her crew. So if we already know that a chunk of insulating foam hit and damaged a heat shield tile, what's in a 400-page report released almost 6 years later? Well, the answer is things many people would rather not read. The details of the last few minutes of the crew's lives is grisly and is spelled out in graphic, dispassionate, critical detail. One example, quote, "The Columbia depressurization event occurred so rapidly that the crew members were incapacitated within seconds before they could configure the suit for full protection from the loss of cabin pressure. Although circulatory systems functioned for a brief time, the effects of the depressurization were severe enough that the crew could not have regained consciousness. This event was lethal to the crew," unquote. If you'd like to read the full report, it can be found in a 10-megabyte file that can be downloaded using a link at the bottom of the text version of this story at aero-news.net. Last year, you may recall, NASA waited till the last few hours of 2007 to release a controversial airline safety report it tried to cover up until Congress intervened. Court records indicate a public auction for assets of the very light jet pioneer Eclipse Aviation will be held on January 14th. That's a week later than originally forecast. The Associated Press reports the auction will happen only if there is more than one bid received by the day before the auction is scheduled. eTurk Aviation wants to buy the company for $198 million, but ANN has received several reports at least one additional competitor will come forth. So far, none have. If that January 14th auction date rings a bell, perhaps it's because it's the first anniversary of eTurk's announcement that it was injecting $100 million into the company to keep it running through mid-year. That was also when eTurk head Roel Pieper was named non-executive chairman of Eclipse, in a precursor to the July ousting of company founder Vern Rayburn as CEO. As ANN reported, Eclipse filed for Chapter 11 protection November 25th. Owners who'd already taken delivery lost their warranties and maintenance agreements, any claim on promised upgrades and undelivered equipment, and subscription services they'd prepaid. Depositors may be out $300 million. They're told to get in line with other unsecured creditors. The company is technically operating under debtor-in-possession financing, but there's no outward sign of any operations at the company's plant in Albuquerque, New Mexico. On December 21st, Associated Press writer Stevenson Jacobs openly questioned how corporate executives could continue using business jets over more economical options. Ed Bolin, president of the National Business Aviation Association, is getting lots of practice lately responding to uninformed groundhogs. Portions of his letter of response to Jacobs have been quoted elsewhere. You can find the whole thing in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. But Bolin said in part, quote, "Your recent article on business aviation presents an inaccurate and misleading picture of business aviation in the United States. It completely misses the reality that every day, tens of thousands of well-managed and cost-conscious U.S. companies use business aviation to help them survive and effectively compete in an intensely unforgiving marketplace. Although perceptions may be to the contrary, the fact is that 85% of the companies that utilize business aviation are small and mid-size, and the passengers on business aircraft are usually salespersons, engineers, technicians, and other employees below the senior executive rank. Business aviation is often used to fly to locations with little or no scheduled airline service. In fact, business aviation reaches 10 times the number of communities served by commercial airlines. Business aviation is also routinely used to visit multiple sites in a single day or respond to business situations when time is of the essence. The basic value of business aviation is that it is a tool that allows companies to do more in less time and often at lower cost than other alternatives. It helps companies maximize employee productivity, reduce total travel times, and have the flexibility they need to quickly adjust to changing business circumstances and schedules. It's unfortunate that your story leaves readers with a view of business aviation that reflects none of these realities," unquote. Up next on ANN, airlines are floundering, but somehow they keep building cash. United pilots continue their war on their boss. and welcome to Biofuels Nomenclature 101. You're listening to AeroNews.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 31st. I'm Paul Plack. Most U.S. domestic airlines are losing money, already deep in debt, and facing a drop-off in demand that has come faster than capacity could be cut. But through it all, they're raising money with more apparent ease than many companies in other industries. The Wall Street Journal reports the airlines have been selling stock, refinancing assets, and winning secured loans to build their cash reserves to weather the recession. Bill Warlick, an airline debt analyst at Fitch Ratings, says part of the secret is the airline's experience in tapping long-term credit, not the shorter-term debt instruments which have dried up in the current credit squeeze. The Journal reports Delta this month got $1 billion in cash through its deal for a co-branded credit card with American Express, and will get another billion from the deal over the next 2 years. American Airlines has already raised $2 billion this year through stock sales, refinancing aircraft, and selling off its money management unit. It recently sold 39 turboprops to Danish investors for an estimated $200 million and will lease them back from the buyer. Southwest just announced a similar plan to sell 10 of its 737s to an unidentified lessor, raising $175 million in cash. Southwest will lease the planes back and continue to maintain and operate them. Even if the recession ends early and fuel prices rebound slowly, airlines will face challenges. Fitch estimates the seven largest U.S. airlines have debts of $4.4 billion maturing in 2009 and another $6 billion in 2010. And even when they can borrow, the terms are not pretty. Even as 30-year home mortgage rates dip to near the 5% level, Southwest, which has maintained an investment-grade credit rating, had to offer a 10.5% interest on private notes it recently issued. That's just over double the 5.2% it paid back in May, for a loan of $600 million over 12 years. The race is on to establish firsts in the looming biofuel industry, but you may have to do some parsing of the words to figure out exactly what some of those firsts really are. Back in early February, an Airbus A380 was flown for 3 hours, burning a synthetic fuel processed from natural gas. That was an alternative fuel, although it was not considered a biofuel, because it originated as a fossil fuel, although fossil fuels originate in part from the decay of biological organisms. But I digress. Later that same month, Virgin Atlantic and GE Aviation collaborated to achieve what was claimed to be the first commercial flight using a sustainable fuel from biomass. A 747, chosen in part for its four-engine redundancy, flew burning babassu oil and coconut oil mixed with traditional Jet A in one of the four engines. The flight was noteworthy, but that particular biofuel is now grouped among first-generation biofuels because its production competes with food. So now comes the world's first commercial aviation test flight powered by a sustainable second-generation biofuel. Another 747 took off Monday morning from Auckland International Airport in New Zealand. This flight utilized a biofuel blend of half Jatropha and half Jet A in one of the engines of the Air New Zealand jumbo jet. The test flight was a joint initiative among Air New Zealand, Boeing, Rolls-Royce, and Honeywell's UOP. Jatropha is considered a second-generation sustainable fuel because it's created from the oil-bearing seeds of a family of plants that range from unsavory to toxic, so it won't be driving up food prices. This test is also noteworthy but may receive less attention than the one run by Virgin Atlantic for two reasons. First, it comes at a time when the price of crude oil has fallen to less than one-third of its July peak, which prevents Jatropha Fuels from penciling out. And second, I've made this description of the difference between first and second generation biofuels as interesting as I could, and I see you're still glassing over. Let's talk again when oil hits $200 a barrel. Pilots for United Airlines, who are waging an all-out campaign to discredit United CEO Glenn Tilton, got 2008's parting shots in on Tuesday, saying that under Tilton's watch, United has clearly failed in its efforts to regain its former stature as the world's preeminent airline. Quote, "Over the past year, the airline has been plagued by an appalling lack of leadership and vision. Tilton and his executives have kept United Airlines mired in financial and operational stagnation ever since it exited bankruptcy nearly 3 years ago," unquote. Captain Steve Wallach, chairman of the United Master Executive Council of the Airline Pilots Association, adds, quote, "To its pilots, employees, and passengers, United Airlines is but a shell of its former self. Rather than using the reorganization afforded by bankruptcy, including the billions of dollars contributed by the pilots and other employees, to build upon United's core strengths and brand equity, Mr. Tilton and his executives squandered a rare opportunity to return this airline to its leadership position in the airline industry. United Airlines must free itself from failed leadership and lack of vision so that it can become, once again, the airline for which pilots and employees are proud to work and on which passengers will want to fly," unquote. If it sounds a little like someone got up on the wrong side of the bed, the pilots are still mad at Tilton and the other execs for getting bonuses after employees made wage concessions. You can read more of the hyperbole on a website created by the pilots specifically to bug their boss. It's www.glenntilton.com. That's Glenn with two N's. Still ahead, the Spirit Mars rover pulls through another Martian winter. EAA starts announcing 2009's Oshkosh lineup. And NIMBYs consider whether they can afford a battle with a megachurch. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up the last Aero Briefing for the year 2008. I'm Paul Plack. NASA's Mars rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, are the Energizer Bunnies of unmanned space exploration. They just keep going and going. The two robots were sent to Mars on missions expected to last 90 days. They're now approaching their fifth-year anniversary, and NASA says some of their best work may still lie ahead. Ed Weiler, Associate Administrator for NASA's Science Mission Directorate, comments, quote, "The American taxpayer was told 3 months for each rover was the prime mission plan. The twins have worked almost 20 times that long. That's an extraordinary return of investment in these challenging budgetary times," unquote. The rovers have made important discoveries about wet and violent environments on ancient Mars. They've also returned a 250,000 images, driven more than 13 miles or 21 kilometers, climbed a mountain, descended into craters, struggled with sand traps and aging hardware, survived dust storms, and relayed more than 36 gigabytes of data via NASA's Mars Odyssey orbiter, and they're still ticking. Dust accumulation was thought to be ending the useful life of the rover's solar generating systems, but the Martian winds have helped clean the panels. Spirit, in particular, was not given good odds of surviving its third Martian winter, but that ended December 21st, and Spirit is alive and charging. In 2009, scientists hope to continue trekking the Martian surface and explore two more craters, among other targets. Steve Squires of Cornell University, principal investigator for the rover Science Instruments, says the little bots will go down in history. Quote, "This has turned into humanity's first overland expedition on another planet. When people look back on this period of Mars exploration decades from now, Spirit and Opportunity may be considered most significant, not for the science they accomplished, but for the first time we truly went exploring across the surface of Mars," unquote. The Experimental Aircraft Association says many of the world's top airshow performers have already given early confirmations to participate at AirVenture 2009, being held July 27th through August 2nd at Whitman Regional Airport in Oshkosh. Among the early confirmations are more than a dozen women who will participate in special Women Fly airshow activities on Friday, July 31st and Sunday, August 2nd. Other invited performers include those with Canadian ties or aircraft to honor 100 years of aviation in Canada. Matt Youngkin and Kyle Franklin will perform, as will the Red Bull Aerobatic Helicopter, which made a spectacular debut at Oshkosh in 2008. Favorites including Sean D. Tucker, Mike Goulian, the Aeroshell Aerobatic Team, and the Warbird Spectaculars will be part of the schedule as well. Tom Poberesny, EAA President and AirVenture Chairman, observes, quote, "Each afternoon's showcase and airshow create a daily attraction that simply cannot be seen anywhere else but EAA AirVenture. Oshkosh is the place where the airplanes, people, and innovations come together each year in aviation's family reunion," unquote. Exact daily performance schedules will be finalized closer to the event. Updates will be available at www.airventure.org. That website, by the way, also has one of the coolest-looking countdown clocks ever. And finally, the city of Federal Way, Washington, has approved the application of a megachurch to add a Gila stop in a residential neighborhood. Pastors Casey and Wendy Treat of Christian Faith Center will now have the option to shuttle by air between the 15-month-old Federal Way facility and its Everett campus. The Tacoma News Tribune reports City Hearing Examiner Phil Albrechts granted the Gila stop contingent on no more than 4 landings or takeoffs per week, no flying over adjacent residences, and no takeoffs or landings after 10 p.m. His approval is final if no one who spoke at the public hearing files an appeal. Several NIMBYs, though, are upset about the prospect of helicopters operating in the already noisy neighborhood, which sits next to Interstate 5. But that very freeway noise may work against them. Albrechts said a noise study concluded the Gila stop would result in no measurable increase in noise. Neighbor Elizabeth Carey says she's considering an appeal. A total of 7 people are eligible to do so. But filing an appeal in Federal Way costs $171.50. So far, none of the neighbors has pulled out a wallet. Maybe they need to pass a plate. That's 2008's last wisecrack, and that's the latest from Aero News. All our Aerocasts are off tomorrow for New Year's Day, but we'll be back in our regular schedule on Friday. And if you're making New Year's resolutions, why not make your life easier by subscribing to our Aerocasts? You can do it through iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year, and have a clear and unlimited day.